Okay, good morning, Dan. Today is March 23rd, 2019. We're up in Logan, Utah, 1737 Country Club Drive. I'm here with Dad, and we're going to continue our interviews. And looks like kind of a spring morning. It's rainy. I came up a little early this morning. And mom is gone at Angie's, I think, today. And so it's just me and Dad here. We're going to chit-chat for a little while. And I think we have about 45 minutes in this segment. And so Dad, thank you, first of all, for letting me come up and see you. And I'm actually going to hand this to you. Just making sure everything looks like it's running. If you could just hold this by the sides, kind of like that. Okay, and then just kind of hold it down.
This way.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'm going to hold it. Okay. I'm going to hold it. So, the question was, when you came home, you know, what were some of your key lessons you learned from your bishop presidency?
The overriding bring back, I think, was I had a much deeper appreciation for the gospel, the restoration of the gospel, and the brethren and sisters who had led the kingdom and organized the kingdom and made things available to us that would never have been available to us had they not been faithful and contributed. You know, when you, I suppose this is true with everyone, as it is with me. When I read something before, and it made sense, and it was inspiring, faith promoting. But when you do that repeatedly, and explained it to others, and had a chance to explore the ramifications of the restoration of the gospel to people, and to see their lives change, and to feel the Spirit repeatedly, it, for me at least, it had a profound effect on me. I came home from Canada with a much deeper, more widespread view of things. I had a lot of questions in my mind, which I thought were excellent, because I had to answer as well as I could some of the questions that I had developed in my exploration of the 3-year experience. And it gave me an appreciation of the young men and women who were willing to come and struggle through their separation from their parents, and from their friends, from their lifestyle. And we were really fortunate to see that development happen in these young people. That, I don't know how you could ever avoid not being impressed by that kind of association and seeing that happen in these young people's lives. We had a great bunch of missionaries, really outstanding missionaries who, you know, when they caught the view and when they all went to work and became united, we were able to see, you know, the growth of the church really expand beautifully, and they participated in it, and of course success breeds success, and that's what they wanted to do. And that feeling that they developed in the mission returned home with them, and it had a profound effect on their lives, and we were able to see that, witness that happening in those lives. So it was the Canada-Toronto mission was a great experience in our own life.
What did you learn about yourself during the process as you reflect?
A number of things. You know, there were when when it, the responsibility is given to you to develop discipline in others. There's a there's an opportunity for growth, and there's an opportunity to do harm. And you always want to do no harm kind of thing. You don't want to you don't want to hurt someone, but when you have these young people who are moldable, you want to make sure that you're giving them the best you've got so that they're molded correctly. This part of their lives, which is so important to their all of their life, they have to be given the best that you've got so that they create the kind of life that will be of most benefit to them. And they're all individuals, so you have to treat them individually within the parameters that the Lord has given you. And for me, sometimes that was really hard. There were young people that just couldn't adjust to the discipline of a missionary's life and were doing more harm to, in my opinion at the time, than they were benefiting the mission. So you would, you know, you work and work and work with them, trying to get them to fit. It isn't a cookie cutter thing. It's just the development of their own spiritual discipline so that they are prepared to give the best they can give to the people that they're sent to bless.
Yeah.
And when that doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, then you have a choice. Do you let them remain in the mission and infect the missionaries that are there that have made the adjustment, or do you send them home?
Mm-hmm.
And to send a missionary home was an awfully difficult thing. But I did it.
Mm-hmm.
There were two missionaries. I remember I worked for them almost 2 years. And when I thought we had it resolved, I had them working with companions. I made what probably was a mistake in putting these two missionaries toward the end of their mission in adjoining areas, thinking that they would be separated, but would be able to work and finish their missions well. But one day I found out that they had traded companions, and the two of them got together, and they used the car to go to
have fun.
To have some fun.
Yeah.
And I found out about it, and they only had less than 2 months to go to finish their mission. And I was so upset that I had, you know, worked for so long trying to help them see the end and to feel good about themselves. And anyway, I sent them home.
Yeah.
And it was painful.
I'll bet.
But I had, before I had sent them home, one of the boys' fathers was a bishop, and I had called and spoken with him about his boy, and my thoughts of sending him home, and his dad encouraged me to send him home, so I did both boys. And then I got a phone call from the boy's mother, and she took
a little bit less supportive.
She took an hour or so to tell me what a bad guy I was. You know, those kind of experiences remain, as you can tell, they remain to me today.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know whether I did the right thing. Did I hurt the boy? Did I help him? You know?
Right.
So, a mission president, you're in that kind of a box. Every once in a while, you know, are you doing the right thing? Are you helping? Are you hurting? Are you building? Are you destroying? So, it was a difficult thing.
How did you and Mom grow closer through your missionary service in Toronto?
I think any time that you have a chance to focus unitedly on
a purpose.
A universal, long-lasting kind of thing, and you can see the reason for it, the depth of it, the kind of influence that is possible, and you work together unitedly, it has to just bring you closer together, and you have to understand your focus is on truth and eternity and the well-being of others, and you work at it and you pray about it, and you're willing. Mother had her responsibilities, I had my responsibilities. Sometimes they were united, sometimes they were separate, but you have the conversation that where you work through the issues. It has to be one of the great learning experiences of our life.
Mm-hmm. Was it, when you came home, was it difficult to transition out of the mission into kind of back into the life that you had previously? And if so, why?
No.
You were ready to be done.
I'm sure you're tired.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. I was tired. I had made the promise to the Lord when before we went that I would give it everything I had, and I renewed that to the mission to make sure I was doing. You know, I'm not the brightest light in the heavens. So I just, you know, really focused and worked at it and renewed my focus and renewed it, and we just worked at it. So when I came home, I felt like I honestly felt satisfied.
Really satisfied. Yeah.
I think it was acceptable to the Lord. Now, I may be kidding myself. I don't know that. I'll find out someday. But I felt good about our service.
Yeah, so, that's good. When you came home, you returned to Fox Farm, the house on Fox Farm, and then it wasn't, as I recall, wasn't too long after that you returned that you and Mom made a decision to sell the house and to move up to this house. How difficult was that decision for you guys to sell that house?
We loved our home on Fox Farm. You know, it was one of those things that... You have an asset that you really love, and we were comfortable there, and the setting by the river and everything was just lovely. But your mother and I had always had a conversation. In our conversation, of our absolute commitment to our mothers,
mm-hmm.
So to our families, and a major part of the family was our mothers,
yeah.
Who were widowed.
Yeah.
And still living here, and we couldn't get them to move anywhere with us. So it was we felt like it was our responsibility to properly care for them. So at the time, Mom's mother, Grandma Pocock, was failing in her health, and in the Fox Farm Road, we only had one bedroom. The master bedroom on the main floor. Mm. The rest of the bedrooms were upstairs and in the basement.
Yeah.
And she living with us, Grandma Pocock living with us, we could get her and take care of her during the day upstairs and whatever, but except for her naps, we could let her sleep in our room. And
that's
But when we could get her downstairs to the rooms that we had fixed up for her down there, but it became increasingly dangerous and not suitable. So it was imperative for us to find a home that was suitable.
I see.
So we began to look, and we saw this home over here. This home that we're in now was built by a couple who had a father who was aging and needed a little extra room in the doorways and ramps so the home was here, and it was perfect for us. And so we decided to sell the home in Fox Farm and occupy this one here in Country Club.
Yeah. I remember helping move some of the buckets and things you guys had in the
food storage.
The food storage and everything. Yeah. That was fun. Now, when you came back and then moved up here, I recall that you were it wasn't too long after, I think you were called to serve in the state presidency or something like that, wasn't it?
Yes.
How was serving in the state presidency different from serving as a bishop? You know, in what way is it similar? What way is it different, I guess?
Well,
and you served in the bishop of a student ward, right? So that has its own kind of nuances. But yeah, how was it different? I mean,
well, the it was a little different for me in different ways. When the brethren came to make the change in the stake presidency, and they were interviewing a number of us, and I'm trying to remember who it was, one of the 12 that changed the, I can't remember now exactly who it was,
yeah,
but he had known me as a mission president up in Toronto.
Okay.
And so, and he asked me at the time, do you want to be the state president?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll do whatever you ask and do it happily, but it's not the appropriate time. I think it may not be the appropriate time because I'm trying to put my life back together.
Yeah.
Do things. And so he said, well, could you at least serve as a counselor in state presidency? And I said, I'll do anything you ask me to do, regardless. And I felt good about that. So they called me to be a counselor in state presidency. Counselor to a man who is a great guy, faithful, talented in every way, just a really good guy. It was a struggle for me, one, to be a counselor. I'd always been
the one in charge,
bishop in charge, and the whole thing. But
struggle because.
Just,
you had your opinions that you thought were the way it should be conducted, the work that should be conducted.
This is, you know, this is what I would do, and I felt like this is the way, and the state president wanted to go a different way.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I'm right and he's wrong. We just had different methods.
Yeah, right.
And it was a struggle. I think it was a struggle for him, too, you know, and...
because you had strong opinions.
Well, we had, you know, we were open about things.
Yeah.
And there was never any conflict. We were friends, and everything was warm. There was never any
animosity.
No animosity between me and the state president. He was just a really good guy. So I was the counselor in state presidency, and it worked out okay. You know, it was okay. I don't remember how long I was there.
How's the work as a stake president different from that as a bishop?
As a bishop, you feel like, at least I did, I felt like I had my hands on all the controls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dream or think about your ward and where it ought to go and the direction you're going, what's going on in the lives of your ward members, what's happening with the organizations, what's happening with the teaching, are we growing? You know, you just had your hands on everything. When you go into the stake presidency, you're dealing from a distance.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to learn to... direct things in a little different management style and let things work. It's just a different.
I really enjoyed
being the bishop.
Is in that calling? Are you referring to maybe you're working more by influence as opposed to, you know, being the one to call the shots? Kind of. Is that what you mean by in the state presidency role?
Yeah, some of that. I think you're right. Some of that. I think you as a bishop, you kind of have, it's more of a direct responsibility. You have personal relationships with the people. You're seeing their lives more
closely. Directly, yeah. You're really involved.
You just know what's going on. You have a better feel about what's going on in their lives.
Yeah.
And the direction that their families are going and what needs to be done. And it seems to me that the Lord inspires you more directly with individuals. Now, I know a lot of that's true also with state presidency.
Sure.
But people come for temple recommend interviews and that sort of thing. You see things from more of a distance. I think it's...
You're kind of one step removed, I guess.
Yeah, you're one step removed, and yet the bishops and others almost look to you for, you know, absolute answers. You know, they think you have all the answers. How do you do? What do you do? And
you mean the bishops? The members look to the bishops for that.
Well,
or the bishop looks to the state presidency.
Yeah, the bishop. The state president is a little bit removed, but they think that you know
all. You know everything. Yeah. Interesting. I want to backtrack a little bit because I'm not sure I asked this to you. I want to talk about your parents a little bit. Your dad.
We'll check and see if I give you the same answer.
Yeah, we're gonna play back and compare the tapes. Your dad passed away when he was like 57 or something, like that, 59. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about how you felt when he passed away and how you felt when your mom passed away.
I'm not sure that my answer to you will be. An honest answer, or a clear answer. Let me talk about Dad first.
Mm-hmm.
I always admired and respected my father.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew him to do anything that was not honorable. That was far from who he was. I didn't know that then as much as I know that now.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm old and I think about the past a lot, I do think about how blessed I am to have had my father as my father. I think about, you know, because I spent quite a bit of time actually with him owning the clothing store and working for him. Dad wasn't the kind of man who would sit down and talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
He was, he was there, and I knew he was there, but I didn't I never remember saying, "Dad, let's talk."
Yeah.
Or in the car, say, "Dad, let's talk about," and then give him a subject.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't that kind of relationship.
He wasn't interested. It was his style.
That's who he was. That's why I did things. But I remember with my father, he wasn't active in the church. But I've never known a more honorable, and I can say that categorically. I've never known a more honorable man. When in the store, you know, he'd have friends that would come in and they'd all gather and start to talk and tell stories. And I noticed that if anything was off color, my father would wander away. He wouldn't participate.
Did he just go like that? Snap his fingers? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's funny. But he was that kind of man. He had times where people had taken from him things that were dishonorable, And my father wouldn't retaliate by doing the same, which he had the opportunity to do. He'd say, I'm getting exactly what I agreed, nothing more, nothing less. This is what I agreed to. That's who he was. Never any bad stories, never any talking about anybody. He would never tolerate, yet at the dinner table, he would never tolerate.
Talking bad about someone else.
Any conversation that was negative about anybody.
Yeah.
It wasn't, that's the kind of man he was. You know, when you think about, you know, he worked, he would go to work at 8 to 8:30 in the morning, and the store closed at 6, then he'd have to check out. You know, bounce the books and do everything, and then he'd get home, you know, but that was 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And then if he had a salesman that maybe wanted to show him suits and it was at the Hotel Utah, then he'd have to get in the car and drive down there.
Yeah.
And so I'm not excusing his less of activity in the church, but it's explanatory, and I think the Lord views that. He was, when I came home and they had asked me to go on a mission, Dad said, you know, what does the bishop want? And I said, he just wanted to talk to me. He said, Dad said, what did the bishop want? I said, he asked me if I go on a mission. Dad said, well, what did you say? And I said, well, I don't have quite enough money saved to go. So I'll have to see, you know, and Dad said, I'll pay for your mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of man he was. He was absolutely, I never saw him in the store, I never saw him take a look at another woman. I mean, I was around all the time. See, you know, not all the time, a lot. I didn't ever sit. So that's the kind of man my father was.
He was.
As I have grown older, I have become more and more appreciative of who my father was.
Mm-hmm.
My life isn't, my life is, say in a positive way, my life is really blessed for having him as my father. Now, my mother was absolutely devoted to her family. You know my mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her life was around her family, and I don't mean just her kids. But her mother, her mother-in-law, her sisters, you know, she just served and served.
Yeah.
That was, my mother gave and gave and gave. And she did it without complaint. She never expected anything of it. And that's who she was. She and Dad were devoted to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw Dad take another look at a woman in the store. He just did, that isn't who he was. And there was never any conversation. Any kind of conversation that was had in our home was positive.
Yeah.
And it was a result of mother and dad. And, you know, that's the kind of environment. I had the best of all worlds. I believe, I have no way to verify this, and it's only me saying this, but I can't imagine Heavenly Father not completely accepting their life and their devotion.
Yeah. What it must have been somewhat of a surprise, given your dad's age, for him to pass away so young.
Yeah, really, really painful.
Where were you when you heard the news? And
well, he had. Had health problems, and so I came home to be there, and then he and to see him, and he went through some struggles, and then when they were going to do some major surgery on him, then I came home. And to be with mother and to help her through the experience. When he was in the operating room of the hospital, they called and asked me if they should just, his stomach was full of cancer.
Okay.
And they asked me if they should just close him up and not attempt to cut out the cancer because it was so prevalent.
Oh, I see.
And so I said, let me, so I just, I talked to mother for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And said, we've got to try.
Mm.
We've got to try. So they tried.
So they removed
most of his stomach.
Most of his stomach, wow.
Yeah, it was a bad thing. And it was really painful. And I picked painful in two ways. One, you know, I didn't want to see Dad suffer. He was just a great guy. I never heard him complain about it.
Yeah.
He was going through it, and it was painful because I never really, what I would like to have done, and I think it should have been initiated by me to say, Dad, tell me how you feel about A, and tell me how you feel about B, and have him just explore. So I like to know more about how he felt and what he did.
Yeah.
I knew that Dad knew that the gospel was true. Mm. I knew that Dad said prayers.
Yeah.
I knew Dad was faithful to mother. Mm-hmm. I knew, you know, all of these things. He just, you know, he started to go to church, and they called on him to pray, and it was embarrassing for him.
Oh, I see.
They called him out of the audience to.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah, he went back and they told me, you know, if you come, they will, you know,
we won't call on you.
But
yeah.
They did, and so he said, "I'm not going back."
Mm.
So that was a bad judgment on his part, but I understand.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the Lord does. So, Dad was great in every way. He was I think, in my judgment, he was one of the great guys.
After the surgery, how long did he? Do you remember how long he lived?
I don't remember, but it wasn't very long.
It wasn't very long. He continued to deteriorate his health.
Yeah, and he was real. It was a tough one.
Just really painful and sick.
It was really sick. Yeah.
And you returned to Arizona, and then one day got a call that he had passed away. Yeah. Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
Yeah. No, I.
When you realize how young he was. Yeah.
Yeah. Very young. Very young.
Yeah. But and one of the nice things for me. When I, you know, and as I said, I've thought a great deal about him and who he was, and my father's reputation was gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anywhere I went, and all I had to say was, I'm Melroy Smith's son.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I was okay. I mean, and that's the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in any way an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Because I was Melroy Smith's son.
Yeah.
Everybody knew me and could trust him.
Yeah. His integrity carried. Impacted you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just, that's who I was. And,
yeah.
You know, and what's nice about that, you know, for me is that it gave me, I don't want to mess that up.
Yeah, yeah,
So I'd never want to bring any black marks on our family or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Did you, back then, I assume it wasn't, you know, you weren't as connected as we are today. You couldn't, probably picking up the phone was pretty expensive and talking, and your dad wasn't a man, of a lot of words anyway, but what kind of sense of loss did you feel when he passed, or had you kind of resolved that in your mind a little bit in advance, given the time through which he passed in his sickness.
Yeah, I'm sure that I had cushion.
Because you knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And so I had, there was some
time to mentally prepare.
To go, and then when he went, I think my thoughts, I can't remember clearly, you know, but I think as I recalled, I think my thoughts centered more on my mother.
Yeah.
You know, now, because she and Dad really loved each other.
Yeah, I remember going over to her house, and she would reflect and tell me about their trips to Bear Lake, and just with great, great fondness.
Yeah, they had a good marriage. They were absolutely devoted to each other. And so when Dad died, you know, when he was ill, her whole life was centered on caring for Dad.
Yeah.
Dad, you know, it wasn't, there was nothing, this was true for both of them. There was nothing, that they didn't do things for show.
Yeah.
And this is evidenced again, Mother cared for Dad constantly, in a loving way. And it wasn't to look, you know, look at Lola Bell, how she's caring for Milroy.
Yeah, right.
You know, it was
all substance.
It was all substance. It was all real. And so she devoted her life to making him comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, she didn't do it for show, but it was apparent.
Yeah, yeah. How, and so Grandma lived another 30 plus years, I think, after your mom lived about 30 years later. How, and we got about 8 minutes left here, so I'm just kind of watching the clock a little bit on this little recording, but how did her passing affect you? Obviously, you had moved back to Logan, you know, spent a lot of time with her. Our family became, you know, very familiar with her. How did her passing affect you when it happened?
That's interesting because, you know, she was living with us, of course, and I had a real attachment to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
We were really close, and I loved her so much. And the expectation is that all of us will die, and death was okay with me. Because I realized what, you know, it wasn't an end, but a beginning, and she would be comfortable, and she was becoming more uncomfortable in some ways with her health, and I didn't mind. When I remember, I think it was Charlie. And I remember standing in the kitchen, our kitchen area, and Charlie said, came and said, "You better go see Mom, Grandma."
Hmm.
And I went into her bedroom. Went into her bedroom, and she had passed.
Oh. Hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. I felt like, and I, you know, all of a sudden just bubbled up in the emotion, bubbled up in me, and I began to cry, and then it stopped.
Hmm.
And I think the control, the emotional control came because I had become convinced and converted to the idea that how peaceful things were on the other side, and how beautiful they were, and she was okay.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't suffering, and I feel really good about that. So, I, you know, when someone has lived a life as I think my mom and dad had lived, and they were comfortable who they were and what they had done, although they weren't what you and I call active completely in a church, it's my opinion, I'm no judge, but it's my opinion that they're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I never felt anything but just kindness and love from Grandma Smith. You know, I never knew your dad, but she was just so sweet and gentle and kind and caring, you know, and very generous, you know. She was always very generous to me. I know that she was in a lot of pain. I mean, it seemed to me that she was in a lot of, I mean, she had always had arthritis really badly, and I remember her neck giving her problems all the time and that, so I'm sure there was a lot of relief when she passed that she was freed from that.
And she, you know, and I believe she was with Dad.
Yeah.
And Grandma always, you know, when we moved back to Logan, when she was always to church with us and, you know, doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
She was a believer. She's the one that taught me to pray.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd come upstairs from my bedroom in the basement, and she would be in the kitchen area, and she would say, "Let's pray."
Yeah.
She's taught me how to pray, and she was just a wonderful person. She was, and that's, she never, and this is true with that, never spoke ill of anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just not who they were.
Who they were.
Just great, solid people.
To what extent did you feel, you know, obviously because of our belief, we know that there's life beyond and they continue to live spiritually. But to what extent did you feel, you know, a sense of emptiness after they passed in your life? Or did that belief kind of feel that emptiness?
I don't know if my answer will be accurate or not. I feel I was, with Dad's passing, it was relief for him.
Just relief from the suffering.
It was, yeah, the relief, you know, I didn't want to see him go through that pain.
Yeah.
In that suffering.
Yeah.
And now that pain for him was gone.
Yeah.
And I believed that there was rest and peace and comfort and and he had, I just, Dad had earned his place.
Yeah,
he was okay. With the mother, it was kind of the same thing, but now she could be with Milroy.
Yeah,
and that's where she wanted to be, and she was at peace, and she had made a great contribution, in my opinion, to the world. To our little world,
you know,
her world was pretty small.
Yeah,
and she was always proud of you kids and your missions and who you were, and you know, she'd give anything she had to make you guys happy.
Yeah, I always got that sense. All right, well, we're coming up on time, so let's conclude this session. Dad, thank you for let me come up and steal a little bit of your morning.
Thanks for coming all the way up.
We're gonna stop right here, and I'm gonna just snap a little photo and conclude the recording here.
You're gonna snap a little photo of you, not me, right?
Okay. Good morning, Dad. Today is March 23rd, 2019. We're up in Logan, Utah, 1737 Country Club Drive. I'm here with Dad, and we're going to continue our interviews. And it's looks like kind of a spring morning. It's rainy. I came up a little early this morning, and Mom is gone at Angie's, I think, today. And so it's just me and Dad here. We're going to chit-chat for a little while, and I think we have about 45 minutes in this segment. And So Dad, thank you, first of all, for letting me come up and see you. And I'm actually going to hand this to you. And so just making sure everything looks like it's running. If you could just hold this by the sides kind of like that.
Okay, and then just kind of hold it down.
This way.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to hold it. Okay. I'm going to hold it. So, question was, when you came home, you know, what were some of your key lessons you learned from your bishop presidency?
The overriding bring back, I think, was I had a much deeper appreciation for the gospel, the restoration of the gospel, and the brethren and sisters who had led the kingdom and organized the kingdom and made things available to us that would never have been available to us had they not been faithful and contributed. You know, when you, I suppose this is true with everyone, as it is with me. When I read something before, and it made sense, and it was inspiring, faith promoting. But when you do that repeatedly, and explained it to others, and had a chance to explore the ramifications of the restoration of the gospel to people, and to see their lives change, and to feel the Spirit repeatedly, it, for me at least, it had a profound effect on me. I came home from Canada with a much deeper, more widespread view of things. I had a lot of questions in my mind, which I thought were excellent, because I had to answer as well as I could some of the questions that I had developed in my exploration of the 3-year experience. And it gave me an appreciation of the young men and women who were willing to come and struggle through their separation from their parents and from their friends, from their lifestyle. And we were really fortunate to see that development happen in these young people. That I don't know how you could ever avoid not being impressed by that kind of association and seeing that happen in these young people's lives. We had a great bunch of missionaries, really outstanding missionaries who, you know, when they caught the view and when they all went to work and became united, we were able to see, you know, the growth of the church really expand beautifully, and they participated in it. And of course, success breeds success, and that's what they wanted to do. And that feeling that they developed in the mission returned home with them, and it had a profound effect on their lives. And we were able to see that, witness that happen in those lives. So it was the Canada-Toronto mission was a great experience in our own lives.
What did you learn about yourself during the process as you reflect?
A number of things. You know, there were when the responsibility is given to you to develop discipline in others, there's a there's an opportunity for growth, and there's an opportunity to do harm. And you always want to do no harm kind of thing. You don't want to hurt someone. But when you have these young people who are moldable, you want to make sure that you're giving them the best you've got so that they are molded correctly. This part of their lives, which is so important to all of their life, they have to be given the best that you've got so that they create the kind of life that will be of most benefit to them. And they're all individuals, so you have to treat them individually within the parameters that the Lord has given you. And for me, sometimes that was really hard. There were young people that just couldn't adjust to the discipline of a missionary's life and were doing more harm in my opinion at the time, then they were benefiting the mission. So mm-hmm. You would you work and work and work with them, trying to get them to fit. It isn't a cookie cutter thing. Mm-hmm. It's just the development of their own spiritual discipline, so that they are prepared to give the best they can give to the people that they're sent to bless.
Yeah.
And when that doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Then you have a choice. Do you let them remain in the mission and infect the missionaries that are there that have made the adjustment, or do you send them home?
Mm-hmm.
And to send a missionary home was an awfully difficult thing. But I did it.
Mm-hmm.
There were two missionaries. I remember I worked for them almost 2 years. And when I thought we had it resolved, I had them working with companions. I made what probably was a mistake in putting these two missionaries toward the end of their mission in adjoining areas, thinking that they would be separated, but would be able to work and finish their missions well. But one day I found out that they had traded companions, and the two of them got together and they used the car to go to
have fun.
To have some fun.
Yeah.
And I found out about it, and they only had less than 2 months to go
mm-hmm.
to finish their mission. And I was so upset that I had, you know, worked for so long trying to help them see the end and
yeah.
to feel good about themselves. And anyway, I sent them home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was painful.
I'll bet.
But I had, before I had sent them home, one of the boys' fathers was a bishop, and I
yeah.
had called and spoken with him about his boy and
yeah.
And my thoughts of sending him home, and his dad encouraged me to send him home, and which so I did, both boys, and then I got a phone call from the boy's mother. And she took
a little bit less supportive.
She took an hour or so to tell me what a bad guy I was. You know, those kind of
yeah.
experiences remain, as you can tell, they remain to me
yeah,
today.
Yeah,
you know, I
yeah.
don't know whether I did the right thing. Did I hurt the boy? Did I help
right,
him? You know?
Right.
So, a mission president, you're in that kind of a box. Every once in a while, you know, are you doing the right thing? Are you helping? Are you hurting? Are you building? Are you destroying? So.
Yeah.
It was a difficult thing.
How did you and Mom grow closer through your missionary service in Toronto?
I think any time that you have a chance to focus unitedly on a
purpose.
A universal, long-lasting kind of thing, and you can see the reason for it, the depth of it, the kind of influence that is possible, and you work together unitedly. It has to just bring you closer together, and you have to understand your focus is on truth and eternity, and the well-being of others, and you work at it, and you pray about it, and you're willing. Mother had her responsibilities. I had my responsibilities. Sometimes they were united, sometimes they were separate. But you have the conversation that where you work through the issues. It has to be one of the great learning experiences of our life.
Mm-hmm. Was it, when you came home, was it difficult to transition out of the mission into kind of back into the life that you had previously? And if so, why?
No.
You were ready to be done.
I was tired.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. I was tired. I had made the promise to the Lord when before we went, that I would give it everything I had, and I renewed that to the mission to make sure I was doing, you know, I'm not the brightest light in the heavens, So I just, you know, really focused and worked at it and renewed my focus and renewed it. And we just worked at it. So when I came home, I felt like I honestly felt satisfied.
Really satisfied. Yeah.
I think it was acceptable to the Lord. Now, I may be kidding myself. I don't know that. I'll find out someday. But I felt good about our service.
Yeah, so, that's good. When you came home, you returned to Fox Farm, the house on Fox Farm, and then it wasn't, as I recall, wasn't too long after that you returned that you and Mom made a decision to sell the house and to move up to this house. How difficult was that decision for you guys to sell that house?
We loved our home on Fox Farm. You know, it was one of those things that you have an asset that you really love, and we were comfortable there, and the setting by the river and everything was just lovely. But your mother and I had always had a conversation. In our conversation, of our absolute commitment to our mothers,
mm-hmm.
So to our families, and major part of the family was our mothers,
yeah.
Who were widowed,
yeah,
and still living here, and we couldn't get them to move anywhere with us. So it was we felt like it was our responsibility to properly care for them. So at the time, Mom's mother, Grandma Pocock, was failing in her health, and in the Fox Farm Road, we only had one bedroom, the master bedroom on the main floor. Mm. The rest of the bedrooms were upstairs and in the basement.
Yeah.
And she living with us, Grandma Pocock living with us, we could get her and take care of her during the day upstairs and whatever, but except for her naps, we could let her sleep in our room. And
that's
But when we could get her downstairs to the rooms that we had fixed up for her down there, but it became increasingly dangerous and not suitable. So it was imperative for us to find a home that was suitable.
I see.
So we began to look, and we saw this home over here. This home that we're in now was built by a couple who had a father who was aging and needed a little extra room in the doorways and ramps and so the home was here, and it was perfect for us. And so we decided to sell the home in Fox Farm and occupy this one here in Country Club.
Yeah, yeah. I remember helping move some of the buckets and things you guys had in the
food storage.
The food storage and everything. Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. Now, when you came back and then moved up here, I recall that you were, it wasn't too long after, I think you were called to serve in the state presidency or something like that, wasn't it?
Yes.
How was serving in the state presidency different from serving as a bishop? You know, in what way is it similar? What way is it different, I guess?
Well,
and you served in the bishop of a student ward, right? So that has its own kind of nuances, but yeah. how was it different? I mean,
well, the it was a little different for me in different ways. When the brethren came to make the change in the state presidency. And they were interviewing a number of us, and I'm trying to remember who it was. One of the 12 that changed I can't remember now exactly who it was.
Yeah.
But he had known me as a mission president up in Toronto.
Okay.
And so, and he asked me at the time, do you want to be the state president?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll do whatever you ask and do it happily. but it's not the appropriate time. I think it may not be the appropriate time because I'm trying to put my life back together.
Yeah.
Do things. And so he said, well, could you at least serve as a counselor in Sake Presidency? And I said, I'll do anything you ask me to do, regardless. And I felt good about that. So they called me to be a counselor in Sake Presidency. Counselor to a man who is a great guy, faithful, talented in every way, just a really good guy. It was a struggle for me, one, to be a counselor. I'd always been
the one in charge,
bishop in charge, and the whole thing. But
struggle because you had your opinions that you thought were the way it should be conducted, the work that should be conducted.
This is, you know, this is what I would do, and I felt like this is the way. And the stake president wanted to go a different way.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I'm right and he's wrong. We just had different methods.
Yeah, right.
And it was a struggle. I think it was a struggle for him too. You know,
because we had strong opinions.
Well, we had, you know, we were open about things.
Yeah.
There was never any conflict. We were friends, and everything was warm. There was never any
animosity.
No animosity between me and the state president. He was just a really good guy. So I was the counselor in state presidency, and it worked out okay. You know, it was okay. I don't remember how long I was there.
How's the work as a stake president different from that as a bishop?
As a bishop, you feel like, at least I did, I felt like I had my hands on all the controls. Mm-hmm. You know, you could dream or think about your ward and where it ought to go and the direction you're going. What's going on in the lives of your ward members, what's happening with the organizations, what's happening with the teaching, are we growing? You know, you just had your hands on everything. When you go into the stake presidency, you're dealing from a distance.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to learn to direct things in a little different management style and let things work. It's just a different
is thing.
Enjoyed being the bishop.
Is in that calling, are you referring to maybe you're working more by influence as opposed to, you know, being the one to call the shots, kind of? Is that what you mean by in the state presidency role?
Yeah, some of that. I think you're right. And some of that. I think as a bishop, you kind of have, it's more of a direct responsibility. You know, you have personal relationships with the people. You're seeing their lives more closely.
Directly, You're really involved.
You just know what's going on. You have a better feel about what's going on in their lives.
Yeah.
And the direction that the families are going and what needs to be done. And it seems to me that the Lord inspires you more directly with individuals. Now, I know a lot of that's true also with state presidency.
Sure.
But people come for temple recommended interviews and that sort of thing. You see things from more of a distance. I think it's...
You're kind of one step removed, I guess.
Yeah,
aren't you?
You're one step removed, and yet the bishops and others almost look to you for, you know, absolute answers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they think you have all the answers. How do you do? What do you do? And
you mean the bishops? The members look to the bishops for that.
Well,
or the bishop looks at the stake presidency.
Yeah, the bishop. Okay. Yeah, so the stake president is a little bit removed, but they think that you know
all you know everything. Yeah. Interesting. I want to backtrack a little bit because I'm not sure I asked this to you. I want to talk about your parents a little bit. Your dad.
We'll check and see if I give you the same answer.
Yeah, we're gonna play back and compare the tapes. Your dad passed away when he was like 57 or something, like 59. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about how you felt when he passed away and how you felt when your mom passed away.
I'm not sure that my answer to you will be an honest answer or a clear answer. Let me talk about Dad first.
Mm-hmm.
I always admired and respected my father.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew him to do anything that was not honorable. That was far from who he was. I didn't know that then as much as I know that now.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm old and I think about the past a lot, I do think about how blessed I am to have had my father as my father. I think about, you know, because I spent quite a bit of time actually with him owning the clothing store and working for him. Dad wasn't the kind of man who would sit down and talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
He was, he was there, and I knew he was there, but I didn't I never remember saying, "Dad, let's talk."
Yeah.
Or in the car, say, "Dad, let's talk about," and give him a subject.
Yeah.
It wasn't that kind of relationship.
He wasn't interested. It wasn't his style.
That's who he was. That's why he did things. But I remember with my father, he wasn't active in the church. But I've never known a more honorable, and I can say that categorically, I've never known a more honorable man. When in the store, he'd have friends that would come in and they'd all gather and start to talk and tell stories. And I noticed that if anything was off color, my father would wander away. He wouldn't participate.
Did he just go like that? Snap his fingers. Just kidding.
Yeah, that's funny. But he was that kind of man. He had times where people had taken from him things that were dishonorable, and my father wouldn't retaliate by doing the same, which he had the opportunity to do. He'd say, "I'm getting exactly what I agreed, nothing more, nothing less. This is what I agreed to." That's who he was. Never any bad stories, never any talking about anybody. He would never tolerate, at the dinner table, he would never tolerate
talking bad about someone else.
Any conversation, he was negative about anybody.
Yeah.
It wasn't, so that's the kind of man he was. You know, when you think about, he would go to work at 8 to 8:30 in the morning, and the store closed at 6. Then he'd have to check out, bounce the books and do everything. And then he'd get home, but that was 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And then if he had a salesman that maybe wanted to show him suits and it was at the Hotel Utah, then he'd have to get in the car and drive down there.
Yeah.
And so I'm not excusing his less activity in the church, but it's explanatory, and I think the Lord views that. He was, when I came home and they had asked me to go on a mission, Dad said, "What does the bishop want?" And I said, "He just wanted to talk to me." Dad said, "What did the bishop want?" I said, he asked me if I go on a mission. Dad said, well, what did you say? And I said, well, I don't have quite enough money saved to go, so I'll have to see, you know. And Dad said, I'll pay for your mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of man he was. He was I never saw him in the store. I never saw him take a look at another woman. I mean, I was around all the time. See, you know, not all the time, a lot. I didn't
ever see him.
So that's the kind of man my father was.
He was.
I have grown, as I have grown older, I have become more and more appreciative of who my father was.
Mm-hmm.
My life isn't, my life is, say in a positive way, my life is really blessed for having him as my father. Now, my mother was absolutely devoted to her family. You know my mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her life was around her family, and I don't mean just her kids, but her mother, her mother-in-law, her sisters.
Yeah.
You know, she just served and served.
Yeah.
That was my mother gave and gave and gave, and she did it without complaint. She never expected anything of it. And that's who she was. She and Dad were devoted to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I said I never saw Dad take another look at a woman in the store. That isn't who he was. And there was never any conversation. Any kind of conversation that was had in our home was positive.
Yeah.
And it was a result of Mother and Dad. And you know, that's the kind of environment. I had the best of all worlds. I believe, I have no way to verify this, and it's only me saying this, but I can't imagine Heavenly Father not completely accepting their life and their devotion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What it must have been somewhat of a surprise, given your dad's age, for him to pass away so young.
Yeah, really, really painful.
Where were you when you heard the news? And
well, he was. He had had health problems, and so I came home to be there, and then to see him, and he went through some struggles, and then when they were going to do some major surgery on him, then I came home and to be with Mother and to help her through the experience. When he was in the operating room of the hospital, they called and asked me if they should just, his stomach was full of cancer.
Okay.
And they asked me if they should just close him up and not attempt to
mm-hmm.
cut out the cancer because it was so prevalent.
Oh, I see.
And so I said, I talked to Mother for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And said, we've got to try.
Mm.
We've got to try. So they tried.
So they removed
most of his stomach.
Most of his stomach. Wow.
Yeah, it was a bad thing, and it was really painful, and painful in two ways. One, you know, I didn't want to see Dad suffer. He was just too great. Guy, I never heard him complain about it.
Yeah,
he was going through it, and then it was painful because I never really what I would like to have done, and I think it should have been my initiated by me to say, Dad, tell me how you feel about A, and tell me how you feel about B, and
yeah.
and have him just explore. So I like to know more about how he felt and what he did.
Yeah.
I knew that Dad knew that the gospel was true. Mm-hmm. I knew that Dad said prayers.
Yeah.
I knew Dad was faithful to Mother. Mm-hmm. I knew, mm-hmm. you know, all of these things. He just, you know, him, he didn't, he started to go to church and they called on him to pray and you know, it was embarrassing for him.
Oh, I see.
They called him out of the audience to.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah, he went back and they told him that, you know, if you come, they will, you know,
we won't call on you.
But
yeah.
They did, and so he said, "I'm not going back."
Mm.
So that was a bad judgment on his part, but I understand.
Yeah,
and so, and I'm sure the Lord does. So, Dad was great in every way. He was I think, in my judgment, he was one of the great guys.
After the surgery, how long did he? Do you remember how long he lived?
I don't remember, but it wasn't very long.
It wasn't very long. He continued to deteriorate his health.
Yeah, and he was real. It was a tough.
Just
one.
Really, really painful and sick.
He was really sick. Yeah.
And you returned to Arizona, and then one day got a call that he had passed away. Yeah. Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, no, I
wouldn't realize how young he was. Yeah.
Yeah, very young. Very young.
Yeah, but and one of the nice things for me, when I, you know, and as I said, I've thought a great deal about him and who he was, and my father's reputation was gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anywhere I went, and all I had to say was, "I'm Melroy Smith's son."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I was okay. I mean, and that's the way it was. That's not in any way an exaggeration.
Yeah,
because I was Melroy Smith's son.
Yeah,
everybody knew me and could trust him.
Yeah, yeah. His integrity carried. Impacted you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I was just who I was, and you know, and what's nice about that, you know, for me is that it gave me this is, I don't want to mess that up.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
So I'd never want to bring any black marks on our family or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, did you you know, back then, I assume it wasn't, you know, you weren't as connected as we are today. You couldn't, probably picking up the phone was pretty expensive and talking, and your dad wasn't a man of a lot of words anyway. But what kind of sense of loss did you feel when he passed, or had you kind of resolved that in your mind a little bit in advance, given the time through which he passed in his sickness?
Yeah, I'm sure that I had cushion.
Because you knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And so there was some
time to mentally prepare.
To go, and then when he went, I think my thoughts, I can't remember clearly, you know, but I think as I recalled, I think my thoughts centered more on my mother.
Yeah.
You know. Now, because she and Dad really loved each other.
Yeah, I remember going over to her house, and she would reflect and tell me about their trips to Bear Lake, and just with great, great fondness.
Yeah, they had a good marriage. They were absolutely devoted to each other. And so when Dad died, you know, when he was ill. Her whole life was centered on caring for Dad.
Yeah.
Dad, you know, it wasn't. There was nothing. This was true for both of them. There was nothing that they didn't do things for show.
Yeah.
And this is evidenced again. Mother cared for Dad constantly in a loving way. And it wasn't to look, you know, look at Lola Bell, how she's caring for Milroy.
Yeah, right.
You know, it was...
It was all substance.
It was all substance. It was all real. And so she devoted her life to making him comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, she didn't do it for show, but it was apparent.
Yeah, yeah. How... And so Grandma lived another 30 plus years, I think, after your mom lived about 30 years later. How, and we got about 8 minutes left here, so I'm just kind of watching the clock a little bit on this little recording, but how did her passing affect you? Obviously, you had moved back to Logan, you know, spent a lot of time with her. Our family became, you know, very familiar with her. How did her passing affect you when it happened?
That's interesting because... you know, she was living with us, of course, and I had a real attachment to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
We were really close, and I loved her so much. And the expectation is that all of us will die, and death was okay with me. Because I realized what, you know, it wasn't an end, but a beginning. And she would be comfortable. And she was becoming more uncomfortable in some ways with her health. And I didn't mind. When I remember, I think it was Charlie. And I remember standing in the kitchen, our kitchen area, and Charlie came and said, "You better go see Mom, Grandma."
Hmm.
And I went into her bedroom. Went into her bedroom, and she had passed.
Oh. Hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. I felt like, and I all of a sudden just bubbled up in the emotion, bubbled up in me, and I began to cry, and then it stopped.
Hmm.
And I think the emotional control came because I had become convinced and converted to the idea that how peaceful things were on the other side, and how beautiful they were, and she was okay.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't suffering, and I feel really good about that. So, I, you know, when someone has lived a life as I think my mom and dad had lived, and they were comfortable who they were and what they had done, although they weren't what you and I call active completely in the church, it's my opinion. I'm no judge, but it's my opinion that they're okay.
Yeah. I never felt anything but just kindness and love from Grandma Smith. You know, I never knew your dad, but she was just so sweet and gentle and kind and caring, you know, and very generous. You know, she was always very generous to me. I know that she was in a lot of pain. I mean, it seemed to me that she was in a lot of, I mean, she had always had arthritis really badly, and I remember her neck giving her problems all the time and that, so... I'm sure there was a lot of relief when she passed that she was freed from that.
And she, you know, and I believe she was with Dad.
Yeah.
And Grandma always, you know, when we moved back to Logan, when she was always to church with us and, you know, doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
She was a believer. She's the one that taught me to pray.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd come upstairs from my bedroom in the basement, and she would be in the kitchen area, and she would say, "Let's pray."
Yeah.
She taught me how to pray, and she was just a wonderful person. She was, and that's, she never, and this is true with that, never spoke ill of anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just not who they were.
Who they were.
Just great, solid people.
To what extent did you feel you know, obviously because of our belief, we know that there's life beyond and they continue to live spiritually. But to what extent did you feel, you know, a sense of emptiness after they passed in your life? Or did that belief kind of feel that emptiness?
I don't know if my answer will be accurate or not. I feel I was with Dad's passing. It was relief for him.
Just relief from the suffering.
It was the relief. You know, I didn't want to see him go through that pain.
Yeah.
In that suffering.
Yeah.
And now that pain for him was gone.
Yeah.
And I believed that there was rest and peace and comfort and
and
he had, I just, Dad had earned his place.
Yeah,
he was okay. With the mother, it was kind of the same thing, but now she could be with Milroy.
Yeah,
and that's where she wanted to be, and she was at peace, and she had made a great contribution, in my opinion, to the world. To our little world,
you know,
her world was pretty small.
Yeah,
and she was always proud of you kids and your missions and who you were, and you know she'd give anything she had to make you guys happy.
Yeah, I always got that sense. All right, well we're coming up on time, so let's conclude this session. Dad, thank you for let me come up and steal a little bit of your morning.
Thanks for coming all the way up.
So we're gonna stop right here, and okay. I'm gonna just snap a little photo and conclude the recording here.
You're gonna snap a little photo of you, not me, right?